Well, go ahead and open your Bibles to James chapter 5. That's where we'll be today. You know, it's the end of the book of James. His theme and our conclusion of it, I think, is fitting, talking about an unshakable faith. You know, it's I'm a sports guy, this is the ninth inning, the fourth quarter. Hockey people say the third period. The time at the conclusion, you're expecting something. What is it going to be, and how do we conclude? And we think about our lives in such manner. In the financial sector, you're waiting for the closing bell, or for the payday, or final negotiations at the table. In school, you're excited when you get to the last chapter of the book, or the final exam that's coming, and it'll all be over soon. The research dissertation, maybe an oral argument you had to give on that. In pregnancy, you're waiting for that ninth month, the proper dilation, that final push when it'll all be completed. We all desire to finish, and we all desire to finish well, I would assume. To experience the joy in and through the process. We believe we can, we must have victory and triumph in the pursuits that we have dedicated our lives to. If this is true in the secular world, then certainly we must have the same ambition as believers. Are we desiring to finish well? Recently, as we're discussing mentoring and all with some men in the church, one of the questions that we're proposing that they answer to just begin that mentoring relationship is write an obituary of your lives. Natural cause of death, you're older, but as you're at the end of your life looking back, what would you want your life to be like? How would you like to finish? What would you like people to say about you? Don't write it like you are now, but just in the future. How do you see if God completed His task in you and you grabbed onto everything that His desire for you is, what would it say? What would it be like? I don't think we look at the end very often. We get so caught up in the day-to-day, the distractions, the things that have to be done immediately, that sometimes we fail to think about the end. And are we heading towards the end? Next Friday, I'll be getting on a plane, I hope it's taking me to Florida where I'm going to be doing a wedding. But if that pilot doesn't consider where the destination is, he just says we're going to fly around for a while and hopefully we'll get somewhere fun, it'll be of no value to the bride if I don't show up to perform that wedding. I wonder how many of us get onto the plane of life and we really know nothing about our destination or where we're going. Barring an understanding that God is providentially sovereign, He's taking us places, but do we see in His Word where He wants to take us, and are we having our lives follow in that direction, and we're passionately pursuing it? It's this unshakable faith that James has been speaking of all five chapters, and he concludes here about, are you going to finish well? What is that going to look like? Let's talk about all these difficulties that we're going through, like in James chapter 1. But is there any end to this? Is Jesus coming back to rescue us? Is everything going to be okay? How do we continue on in the midst of life that happens now? I'm convinced that every believer in Jesus Christ can have an unshakable faith. It's not something we just have to have testimonies of others, that we personally can endure and overcome and accomplish all that God has set for us to do. We can have an unshakable faith if we would triumph in at least three areas of life that He kind of unpacks or rolls out for us in these last several verses. Starting in verse 7 through the end of the chapter, I just want to hit in our time together three primary principles or three primary emphases that James puts for us. The first, he speaks of patience. If you'll see the very first words there in verse 7, therefore be patient, brethren. Now if you're like me, and perhaps you've enjoyed the book of James, you're going through this and you're doing all right, but then you get to that word patience, and that is not one of my top characteristics. I mean, couldn't we just go ahead and finish the book off without mentioning patience? Because patience isn't just a natural born trait for people, or for men, or for me. Maybe I'll just get more pointed. I'm not an extremely patient person. I would like it now the way I like it. But God has to remind me, and James is saying here, and he's helping me to just trip and stop just for a moment. Therefore, be patient, brethren. Anybody ever pray for patience, by the way? Not anymore. Prayed that, God answered. He didn't say, wait, yes, I'm going to go ahead and give you patience, or at least make you earn that patience. You do it through experience. Patience is what he says here. But here's the principle, and I'm just, this is going to sound vaguely familiar to you as we work through the passage here. Because I see it. I was just amazed when I was going through the text. I'm like, yeah, that's really the passage. It's great. Patience triumphs through knowing God personally. How does patience grow in you? How do you develop the very command here to be patient? You have to know God. And you have to know Him intimately and personally. It's the only place that we can truly learn patience. A divine patience. You know, the Lord is slow to respond, isn't He? He watches in His sovereign wisdom when to act and when to hold back and to be patient with us. Anybody experience the patience of God in their own life? As God challenges you and tries to transform you, but He waits. Therefore, be patient. Patient triumphs. It has victory in the conclusion of our life. Patient triumphs through knowing God personally. I think that's really what He's emphasizing here in the first five verses here, verse 7 through 12. Patience could be translated long-suffering. Perhaps that's your translation. Typically, the Greek phrase here for this patience is patience with other people. Sometimes we have patience with circumstances, and certainly we'll see some of that in the passage as well. But it is patience with other people, and how do we interact with and relate with other people? There are basically three things he says within this. That first, and you know, therefore be patient, brethren. The rest of verse 7 says, until the coming of the Lord. The farmer waits for the precious produce of the soil, being patient about it until it gets the early and late rains. You too be patient. He has to remind us again, strengthen your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is near. Let me give you some helps here. Patience begins with the relationship with God, but it's set in truth. You can be patient when you know something is fact. If I gave you a check with $1 million and I said, that $1 million is secured in the bank for you, you wouldn't wait till the bank to get excited. You have a check in your hand and you're absolutely certain it's there. The truth of the matter is there. You have it. Your excitement happens at the moment you know the truth. Not when you cash the check. All of you at the point of salvation, God has given you a seal, a guarantee of all that is to come, and He's given you a promise. Is God good with His promises? Certainly He is. And so we don't have to wait into heaven to begin to celebrate all the goodness of God. We can do that now with the certainty of the truth of what is to come. Patience is set by truth. You too, be patient. Strengthen your hearts. How can you do that? There's a truth here. For the coming of the Lord is near. The Lord is coming. His timetable is certain. But we don't know His timetable. But we can trust that He's always kept His word. His character is pure. His whole essence is holy. And so, if He says that He's coming, can we count on it? Patience is set by truth. The Lord is coming. It's His timetable. We can stand firm and strengthen our hearts based on the truth until the coming of the Lord. Not only, though, is He coming, we must know in our hearts that until we see Him and we trust in the promise, we have to know that He is a caring God. He's coming, but the Lord is also caring today. Look down at verse 11. Connect the thoughts here. The Lord is full of, what does it say in your translation? Passion, compassion, what? Merciful. Don't forget those. We should have been able to just quote it without looking. What is God's character like? He's compassionate and He's full of mercy. You mean He's coming for me, but He also cares for me now? When we have that kind of truth that is instilled in our hearts and minds, we can learn to be patient. Have you ever told your children, just be patient. I've promised it. It will happen. Just wait. And you wonder why they're so anxious all the time. Well, why not now? You know in your wisdom as a parent when things are right and proper, how much more God knows when it is best. You expect your children to just trust you and love you and know that you care. How much God is saying that to us in James chapter 5. I'm coming. And I care. I'm patient. Wait. You're not waiting on some event. You're waiting on Him. He is enough for you. We ought to wait with this eager expecting of the Lord. Patience is set in truth. Patience is also seen by our speech. It's evidenced by our speech. Both in verse 9 and verse 12, it's how this patience lives out if we are set in the truth of God. Verse 9 says, do not complain, brethren, against one another, so that you yourselves may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing right at the door. Think about how you speak to one another. Remember, this being patience, long-suffering, usually deals with other people. And He tells you, how are you talking to one another? The speech is evidence in how patient you are based on the truths of God. Verse 12, He connects this. But above all, my brethren, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or any other oath. Let your yes be yes. Let your no's be no. And so that you may not fall under judgment. Connecting the judgments of verse 9 and verse 12. Oftentimes people don't quite know how to take verse 12. It seems to not be connected, but I see it clearly here. There's a judgment. There's a connection. There's a how we communicate. If we trust God, we just trust His word and not even our own. Patience is seen by speech. A grumbling heart, or I should say, grumbling mouth weakens the heart. Truth strengthens the heart, and He's already told us to strengthen our heart in the truth of His coming and His caring. Grumbling speech only weakens our heart. Found this poem. I don't know who wrote it, but there's some truth to it. It says, patience is a virtue. Possess it if you can. Found very seldom in women. Never in a man. I didn't want to say the last part, but that's true. There's patience that is set in truth. There's patience seen and evidenced by our speech. There's patience that is learned by example. He gives us several examples here. Talks about farmers in verse 7. Talks about prophets in verse 10. He talks about Job, which was already mentioned this morning, in verse 11. Let me just summarize and say, you know, farmers have to live their lives of patience. Anybody grow up on a farm? Anybody live? Does anybody know a farmer? Anybody sing Farmer in the Dell? Or, you know, something. All right. Yeah, I did not grow up on a farm, but I got to pasture in a community of all farmers when I started my ministry up in northwest Missouri. Everybody was a farmer. You know, if we had men's meeting on Saturday, we had to have it after they fed the cows and they took care of all of